This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
I'm Martin Strong. Let's get right to the consumer news of the past week. It was a bad week for London Drugs. What is being called a cybersecurity incident last Sunday meant they had to shut down all the London Drugs stores in Western Canada for the entire week. One cybersecurity expert says it definitely sounds like some kind of ransomware attack. The store chain says they've been rebuilding their data infrastructure with the help of some third-party computer experts to bring the operation safely back online. London Drugs is based in Richmond. They actually have more than 80 stores across BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And the big question, of course, is did the hackers get into any personal data of customers? London Drugs says they don't believe that happened. Canada has become the first country to put warning messages on cigarettes, not just cigarette packages, but the actual cigarettes themselves. There are 6 health warnings printed directly on the smokes with such cheery slogans as poison in every puff and tobacco smoke harms children. Some cigarettes will feature a new caution about the link between smoking and leukemia. So they're updating their material. More than 1 million people in Canada have died from tobacco-related illness, including cancer, heart disease, and emphysema since the year 2000. A campaign to boycott Loblaw this month is gaining some momentum online. It's not clear how many people are participating, but the Reddit page where it started has more than 60,000 members. Emily Johnson from Milton, Ontario, and several others who started organizing the boycott after the Reddit page was launched as a place to complain about Loblaw and other big grocery stores and the high prices that they're charging for food. If you are caring for an elderly parent or someone in your family who is sick or disabled, I don't have to tell you, it is a challenge. And for you and those people trying to juggle their own lives while trying to still be there for that person, they need help. That is the finding of a survey of caregivers by the Canadian Centre for Caregiving Excellence. It's calling for a national strategy recognizing the mental and financial toll on caregivers, and say its survey highlights the need for caregiver compensation, easily accessible and affordable home care, and workplace support for people juggling work and care. They were talking about the rise in auto thefts across the country in Ottawa this week, and at a House of Commons national security meeting looking into the problem, the president of the Halifax Port Authority told them that scanning more shipping containers looking for stolen cars is not going to do all that much. Port President Alan Gray was skeptical about the plan by Ontario Premier Doug Ford, calling for cargo scanners to be used more frequently at ports. Gray says even if they identify a shipping container with a car in it, it doesn't necessarily mean that that car is stolen or if the shipping paperwork is fake. And it looks like Major League Baseball players and some fans don't like the baseball uniforms, which are supplied by Nike. They say that the pants are sometimes see-through and the fabric looks different when players sweat, and then that makes the tops and the bottoms not match. This week, ESPN reported that Major League Baseball plans to modify its Nike uniforms by the start of next season. ESPN quoted a memo from the league that went out to the players, and in this memo, they blamed Nike and its new performance-focused Vapor Premium uniform, saying Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated. This is Vancouver Consumer on CKNW. I'm Martin Strong, and things are changing in the Vancouver real estate market. And it's not just home prices and the number of sales. Up next, our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. He's going to be here to tell us how George Clooney and Brad Pitt have anything to do. What is the connection between George Clooney and Brad Pitt to Vancouver real estate? He's got that answer when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back to Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and I have a question for you. What do Brad Pitt and George Clooney have to do with Vancouver real estate? Well, our guest this afternoon has the answer to that question. We'll get to that in just a second because it's time to talk real estate with our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. You can find him online at johnnysmartpoint.com, J-O-H-N-N-Y, smartpoint.com. You can also send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. He has been in the real estate game in the Lower Mainland all over the place for a very, very long time, sold more than 1,000 properties. And John is here now. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me back again.
Excellent. Excellent. So I'm very excited about this week's show because we were talking about how Brad Pitt and George Clooney fit in with Vancouver real estate. Things are hopping as usual. I mean, they are yes and no. We'll talk a little bit about the market conditions in the update, but I guess you're always busy.
Yeah, I tend to keep pretty busy, and you know, quite frankly, I'm available right now. If listeners are thinking of calling me, wondering if I have time for them, I always have time. But we talked a little bit about the market. Now we're into May, so the spring intro is definitely over. Now we're full swing into the market, probably until about August, when things tend to slow down just a little bit when people take summer holidays and that sort of thing. So right now, Martin, May, June, July for me. These are the days of summer where I'm working, and these are the days where, you know, a lot of people have either put their home on the market, as we're seeing in the statistics with the inventory climbing a little bit and more selection for buyers, or getting ready to put it on the market. The grass is green, the flowers are nice, the sun has come out. So these are the days, and the next number of shows over the next 3 months should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I talk to a lot of people. A lot of my friends are, you know, maybe they're getting close to retirement age, or the kids are starting to move out of the house. And a big question that everybody has is, what is my house worth? They might not be ready to move just yet, but they're thinking about it. And it might be a year from now, might be 2 years from now. And the big question they want to know is, what is my house worth? So that's something that you can provide as a realtor. It's not like if you phone a realtor, you have to be ready to sell your house, right?
Absolutely. It's a process. We've talked about this. And sometimes it's a quick process where people say, hey, do me an evaluation. If I like what I see, I'm ready to list because I've got a motivation to sell right away. That's wonderful. Other times people say, hey, John, I am definitely going to be selling maybe this year, maybe next year. But in order for me to come up with a good plan in terms of, you know, sometimes, Martin, it's retirement. I might retire this year, or I might, you know, you've heard this, or I might continue on for a little while. Or it might have family situations involved. I've got, you know, children in school, or I've got these other sort of things that make people, you know, kind of think about what's my timeline going to be. And I've always, you know, been happy to meet with people, even if they're not selling right away. And one of the big questions I get that you alluded to is, what's the current value of my property? And, you know, that's a fair question. And I'm always happy to give my opinions based on my experience and what I'm seeing in the market. But I tell people, hey, I'm not the market. I don't decide, but a good agent should be able to give you enough information so that you can make a good decision to price your home in the success zone. And that's going to be one of the topics, you know, for today.
Right. The success zone. I like that. So what is sort of the main factor when you look at a home and you try to figure out the price? Is it what the other homes are selling for in that neighborhood?
Well, that's part of it. You look to the past and you look at the present. So when I'm asked to do an evaluation, I like to get a thorough tour. You know, I like a seller to show me everything in the house. And I'll say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, thanks for having me over here. We talk a little bit. And when they're ready, I say, well, why don't you show me around the home and give me everything that you've got here so I can appreciate what this home has to offer, because they've been living there for years probably, and I've just walked in the door, you know, 20 minutes ago. So I like to do a nice tour, have people walk around and show me the property. And based on that, you know, sometimes I've got some information right off the top. Sometimes there are a few things I want to check on, but really I tend to kind of think in bookends. That's one way of doing an evaluation. In other words, if I can understand, Martin, what your property offers the market, if I can understand what maybe advantages you might have that other homes on the market today don't have, that's a nice plus. Or if I need to also understand and take into account deficiencies or limitations, because every property, you know, is limited in some way in, by the comparables around you. In other words, why can't you ask $5 million for a certain home? Well, maybe because very similar homes are $3 million in your area. So it's a bit of a, it's a comparison. And so when I look back, you mentioned sale properties, homes that have maybe sold recently. Those are a good indication. However, you have to remember that's the past. Those markets perhaps may have changed a little bit statistically, or the competition, maybe at one time when a house sold 3 months ago, there were only four listings like it in the market at that time, and there were a certain number of buyers. And now there's eight listings in the market. It's a little bit more competitive. So your strategy in terms of pricing a home should take into account the following. What do you offer the market? What are your limitations? What is your competition doing? In other words, if I'm a buyer out there today and I'm in this price range, what else can I look at that might satisfy me? And then, of course, the past sales. But again, sometimes someone brings an offer on one of my listings. In fact, this happened very recently. And the buyer's agent's doing a good job. And he says to me, hey, John, here's our offer. And it's based on this, and shows me a sale that happened 3 months ago. And we were priced higher, of course. And, you know, I politely let them know, and my clients, we talk about this, that, you know, that one's gone. If you want to go try to buy that one, go ahead. But this is, you know, the new market. So you got to take a lot of things into account and kind of process what the market's doing in real time. Keep in mind, Martin, your list price is your introduction to the market. It kind of sets the tone. It attracts buyers in that price range. And then from there, you want to get the feedback from the market. How many showings are you getting? What is the feedback? Are people interested in second viewings? Are they asking those kind of questions that, that a serious buyer would ask? And that's a kind of a hint that you are in the success zone. And if you are, then the main task becomes getting as many qualified people into the home. And when those people start to express interest, defending your price, justifying your price, and, you know, here's one of my theories, Martin. You're never going to twist somebody's arm and convince them to pay more for a home or a property than they think it's worth. Mm-hmm. But you can, if you're an effective communicator with a lot of experience and knowledge about what's going on in the market, you can show them why they might want to consider your property. So, and paying your price. So that's part of the art, I think, of making sure that you're in the success zone and, you know, you're going to accomplish your goals.
Right. And I guess sometimes you'll be working with clients and they might think that their property is worth more.
Yeah, sometimes. I don't think there's anything all that unusual about it. And sometimes they don't realize, you know, what it is worth. So mm-hmm. My job, again, when I meet somebody is not necessarily to tell them what they want to hear. I've heard people say to me, you know, hey, John, I talked to a couple agents and, you know, I'm getting these big numbers and I'm not really sure, you know, if that's quite accurate. Well, my job is to tell them what I think based on, again, my experience and what's going on in the market. And one of the things that I promise every one of my clients, I'll always tell you the truth as I see it 100% of the time. So my job is to give accurate information with the caveat, Martin, that I'm not the market. I don't decide anything. And if my opinion, or quite frankly, the opinion of any other realtor or any other real estate agent out there when it comes to market value is put forward on the market and it falls flat, in other words, you're not getting the response, chances are you might be off a little bit, or there's something that you're not promoting properly, because really when it comes down to it, where the rubber hits the road, the market speaks for itself. And those buyers with pre-approved mortgages and money in the bank with a desire to buy properties, they have wants, they have needs, they want to satisfy those things. And if you don't fit into that success zone for them, you're not going to get any action.
John Carlson is our guest. It's Vancouver Consumer. You can find John online at johnnysmartpoint.com. You can also send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. You can give him a call, 604-612-0080. And we're talking about the success zone and figuring out exactly what your property is worth. And you had a funny story about someone you were working with. And they had a house, and it was exactly the same house or the same size and everything on the same street.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, and I've mentioned this to, you know, many clients over the years, because this was a number of years ago, and it really crystallizes. Sometimes, you know, a story like this will crystallize the thought process of what goes into determining value on a home. And I'll tell you the story, if you don't mind. I worked with a really nice couple probably more than 10 years ago now. And they had what I would call a cream puff house. It was in an area of, there weren't row homes, they were detached houses, but close together, very, very similar, same builder, same lot size, you know, very similar products.
Right.
And this was a cream puff. And we promoted the heck out of it, and we got a great response. And at the time, it was the strongest sale.
Right. So when you say cream puff, you mean everything is perfect.
Yeah, it was. It just showed beautifully. All the finishing was wonderful. The condition was wonderful. You know, it's bright. It smells good. It looks good. It's got, you know, happiness written all over it. And those are, everybody loves to take those kind of listings because they really do appeal to a buyer. That's why you get your house ready for market. But we said, I think at the time was the highest sale price in the area, which was well deserved. You know, this couple had done a great job with the home, and they were very happy with me. And they said to me, "Hey, John, my neighbor Ian wants to talk to you about selling his home." And I thought, "Oh, well, wonderful!" So I set up a time with Ian. I went over to see Ian. And, you know, Ian's house was kind of the opposite. I don't want to be too tough, and I'm not naming anybody here, but the house had some issues in terms of the way it looked, the way it smelled, the way it presented itself, you know, carpets, everything.
Yeah.
You look at it, and it was not the same house. But,
needed,
you know,
some
Ian,
work.
It needed some work, yeah. So Ian and I had a conversation, and my job was to give him information, and I made a suggestion. And Ian, you know, thought, hey, why don't we just price it the same as the neighbors? You know, that seemed to work for them. And I thought, well, you know, I have a job to do here. I'm not here to argue with anybody. This is his money and his home. So I kind of suggested that, you know, I don't think that's a good, very good idea, Ian. Number one, all your carpets need to be replaced. And Ian came back with, well, you know, hey, we can negotiate that. And I thought, well, you know, sometimes you can do that. And I said, yeah, but, you know, the other thing is, you know, it's heavily smoked in and we're probably going to have to treat this home. Someone's going to have to paint everything. No, I can negotiate that. And then the list went on, and I was trying to give him good information and advice without being argumentative. And then it suddenly hit me. I thought, you know, I'm not really getting my job done here if I don't give some accurate information and maybe get through. So I thought to myself, how would I communicate my message to Ian? And this thought came to me, and this is the essence of the story. Ian was a bachelor for many years. I'd been married for many years. And I thought of a quick analogy. And I said to Ian, I said, hey, think of it this way, Ian. Let's say we're not in your kitchen at the table talking here. Let's say we're maybe at a nightclub and we're having a good time. There's a band playing and there's a dance floor right in behind us. But we look over our shoulder, and at the table right behind us, we see Brad Pitt and his buddy George Clooney is sitting there, right there with him.
That's the cream puff house.
That's right. And I said to Ian, because again, him being a bachelor, I thought he might understand this. I said, Ian, now here's the kicker. There's only two girls at this dance. What do you think's going to happen? And immediately, I'll never forget it, Ian step forward and says, well, one of us better have a deck of cards. And I slapped my leg and I said, exactly. Nobody's going to be asking us to dance. Why? Because we're comparing ourselves with something that we just can't compete with. And that is the essence of pricing your home. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, you know, and you may have some advantages that the others don't. But at some point, you have to consider yourself as the buyer, who is out there comparing in a price range. And if you elevate your price to the point where there are much bigger homes or homes in better areas or homes in better condition, obviously you're not going to be picked. So the art of doing an evaluation is making sure that, you know, you understand your strengths, you promote those strengths to the market, but that your price is right in terms of your strategy, which may be a little on the high side or maybe sharp, depending. But you understand what you've got, you promote it properly, and you stay in that success zone, and then you follow that up with what the market, how the market responds.
This is Vancouver Consumer. That's John Carlson. You know him as Johnny SmartPoint. You can find him online at johnnysmartpoint.com. And when we come back, more ideas for how you can get more for your home, and also why the devil is in the details. That's when we come back right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back to Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and we're talking real estate with our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny SmartPoint. You can find him online, johnnysmartpoint.com. Or john@johnnysmartpoint.com is the email address, and the phone number 604-612-0080. And we were talking a little bit about how important it is to have an agent you trust and that you can talk to and who will, you know, tell you the truth about things, about, you know, the price of the property and how you value that price of the property. And John, I was just talking to a colleague of mine who just sold his house and they're moving, and he's very excited about it. But he said that they sold the house in April. They bought the new house first. And for a while they thought, yeah, it'll be easy to sell their house. And then they sold their house, but they realized they were kind of lucky, he thought, because he was one of two houses in that area that sold in April. But in May, there were a whole bunch of houses that did not sell. So I guess that's a lot of things to unpack there. But I guess, first of all, what does that say about the market right now?
Well, to your friend, congratulations on the sale and purchase. That's always a big thing. And Martin, that is the best part of this business. And we've had a number of my clients call in and express, you know, happiness and gratitude and those sorts of things. And I'm really happy working with my clients. So congrats to your friend. In this business, that's the best feeling, when people are happy, you give them the keys to their new home. But one thing you mentioned about, you know, the story was that your friend bought a home before he sold his current home. And that's an interesting route to go. It's not uncommon. In fact, I did that when I bought my own home. And I think it goes to knowing what tools you have in your toolkit, because, you know, when it comes to coordinating a sale and a purchase, there's a couple of ways you can go about it. Sometimes people say, hey, I'm not going to sell my home until I know where I'm going. So, fair enough. They don't want to be homeless. So we maybe list the home, or maybe we look for a home first. And then here's the problem though. Sometimes you find the perfect home, and because you think it's perfect, it's probably priced pretty well. It probably offers something that you don't see other places. Well, guess what? There may be one or two or three other people that also think that's a perfect home. Mm-hmm. And they might be a little bit more prepared than you are. So you write a subject to sale, and within a week, that subject to sale offer fizzles out because somebody comes and bumps you out of the way.
And that was the case in this thing. It was a very, he had a great agent that he really liked, and the agent said, I think he even said, this is the one. And they said, do not wait. And he went in and they put an offer on it before the open house, and they got it. So it was one of those cases. It was priced well, and it was a beautiful home.
That sounds like good advice and a good agent. Yeah. And that similar story when I bought my home. But interestingly, and just reading between the lines, there was probably some preparation done prior to that. Because when I have a client who says, you know, I want to find a place first, one of my first thoughts is, okay, let's take a look at financing. You own your home outright, perhaps. You have a lot of equity. You've got a good job. Do you have the arrow in the quiver, so to speak, there to finalize the deal even before you sell? So know what tools you have available to you, because it's very disappointing to find a home, write a subject to sale, and then get bumped. You know, they get a little bit upset, not realizing that there's probably another home very similar to it or just as good coming up. So if you take the strategy of buying first, it's very good to know, do you have the capability of bridge financing if you need to? And it sounds like with your friend's purchase, they might have had that in their back pocket. So that's the strategy I'll talk to with my buyers and sellers. I'll say, look, you don't have to use the bridge financing. There's a cost to set up appraisals and that sort of thing, but you might not even need it if you're very, you know, just hot on this property and it's a great deal and you got to jump on it. They say you make your money when you buy. Chances are you're going to do very well on that, but just be prepared not to lose it if you have that ability. The other way to go sometimes is to sell your house first. And what I mean by that is you list your home. I call it stirring both pots. Right. We've got the home. We put it on the market. Maybe we put the price a little bit high because we're not in a hurry and we're going to just test the market a little bit. And what you kind of do is, if your price is a little bit high and you know it, you still get showings and you might get people interested and you might have people saying, hey, is it negotiable? Is it, you know, and you're stirring that pot and you maybe you got two or three people in there at the same time. Martin, you're out there actively looking for good deals in terms of what you're trying to find. And when you do find the place that you're looking for, again, understanding all the tools that you have at your disposal, you make an offer on that property and then maybe you drop your price a bit. Or I call all the people that have shown and said, hey, the situation's changed a little bit. You've expressed interest. We want to. And so here's the key. If you find a house you like and you haven't sold yet, you try to arrange long dates. In other words, let's say 90 days at least. So if it was today in early May, June, July, maybe you complete in August. Maybe you got a seller that'll even let you do the end of August. Sometimes you make an arrangement saying, hey, if we sell quicker, would you like us to move the dates up? Because we're happy to do that. A seller oftentimes loves that flexibility of a buyer who's willing to do that if they can. So if you set the dates long and you've got bridge financing in your pocket, you're pretty much golden because you can put your house on the market, you can test it a little while, and you still have time to make a sale that's not a rush sale. You're not leaving any money on the table. And that's sometimes how you put a purchase and a sale together and you tie the two. They come together perfectly. You've scheduled the date, so you've got a couple of days in between here and there. So you can sell, collect your payment on the sale, complete on the purchase, move out, move in, and it's done. So stir both pots.
Wow. That is just such a good example of why you need a very experienced real estate agent, one who can hold two wooden spoons at the same time to stir those pots. Johnny Smartpoint, I should mention at this point, you've got a lot of experience. I don't want to put you on the spot, but you've been doing it for almost 30 years?
I started in 96, so I'm in my 28th year.
And you've sold more.
I started young, of course, so of course. That's why.
You were 12 when you sold your first house. Another thing that my friend was telling me about was that he noticed, and one another reason why he was very glad that he trusted his agent and he had full confidence in him is because that there were a lot of little things in the contracts that they were dealing with that were little things that were not properly entered. And I know that that can destroy a contract. And that was something that he was very concerned about and something that his agent was very concerned about. And he was really glad that he had an agent who was really looking at the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed.
Oh, good. Sounds like your friend had a great agent. And I love working with good, experienced agents who do a good job on their side. Of course, if I'm the listing agent and they're the purchasing agent, we have, to some degree, conflicting goals. But it's also a cooperative process because, let's face it, we're talking about, you know, high dollar contracts. And if, as you mentioned, you can void a contract by the way it's written or changes that are made, and you have to be very careful. One thing I'm very proud about, I'm going to brag here for a second.
Go ahead.
In well over 1,000 sales in 28 years, I have never once even had to make a claim on my errors and omissions insurance. We're required as real estate agents to have insurance against making an error or an omission that causes our client, jeopardy. So in all the years, I've never even needed to make a claim or had any problems, but that's why you want to make sure you do dot your I's and cross your T's and have an understanding of what you're getting into with a contract. It's not quite as simple as just cut and pasting, hey, subject to financing, subject to inspection. There are different scenarios that come along here. And so again, working with a good agent on the other side is wonderful. But I think that if you're going to maximize your sale or your purchase, having good representation, not only for negotiating, but making sure the contract is solid and as much as possible to your advantage. Because you basically, Martin, in real estate, you live and die by the contract. There have been all kinds of cases where people maybe thought this might happen, but it turns out that happens because they didn't really understand the contract, maybe, that they were signing, or they didn't quite think far enough ahead. So I liken the job of a good agent to, you know, to an NFL quarterback, maybe, who sees what the defense is doing and knows how to react in time. And again, is not necessarily a decision maker, but gives good advice to the seller in real time or the buyer in real time so that proper decisions can be made and everything is tightened up properly. And you don't have to worry about a sale collapsing or problems that end that lead you to end up in court. So again, this is just one of the aspects of being a real estate agent, recognizing you're handling a very important transaction. It's a big financial transaction and your expertise is very much relied upon. And that's why you got to make sure that you're always on the ball.
Mm-hmm. And you have a realtor who is on the ball, like Johnny Smartpoint, John Carlson, who we're talking to this afternoon on Vancouver Consumer. You can find him online at johnnysmartpoint.com. And if you go to johnnysmartpoint.com right now, you can you've got an open house tomorrow.
I do. Yeah. And actually this ties into part of our conversation because this is a two-bedroom condo in New Westminster, Uptown New West. It's a building that was built in the late 70s, but it's had big dollars spent on retrofitting. So outside, it looks like a brand new building. New siding, new whole envelope. It's quite attractive. This one is, well, the address is 215 Mowat. And we're unit number 311. We have a two bedroom. It's 850 square feet. It's at the front of the building. And the nice thing is, Martin, when you look out the window, it's kind of a seasonal peekaboo. If you look through the trees, you can see the bridge, you can see the river. It's a corner unit, so it's got lots of light. And the way this ties into our conversation is we have an offer subject to sale. There's another buyer that says, hey, we want to buy this place. And we said, okay, but oh gosh, we have to sell our house first. And that's a subject to sale clause. And with a subject to sale clause, you know, typically there would be also some language in there that says, however, the seller, upon receipt of another acceptable offer, may deliver written notice to the buyer or the buyer's agent, requiring that buyer to remove all conditions within, in this case, it's 48 hours. So if we get another offer, we deliver written notice to the buyer and says, hey, it's, you know, either you finalize this thing, remove all your conditions and put down the deposit, or we're going with another offer. So this one's got a subject to sale, meaning it's attractive, it's desirable, but it's wide open. So I'm going to be there tomorrow between 2 and 4 p.m., 215 Mowat. Come and say hi.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that can be heartbreaking if somebody really wants to buy it, but they're waiting to sell a property and they can't. And yeah, so all the reason why you want to go to johnnysmartpoint.com. You can find out about that open house. johnnysmartpoint.com is the website address. And really quickly, like in 30 seconds, when you go to an open house, what's the first thing you kind of look at? I guess it's a lot of things, but what's the first thing you look at in an open house?
When I'm holding an open house?
Or if you were going into an open house?
Keep my eyes open. I like to ask the agent questions, whether you're negotiating or just fishing around for information. I don't think there's any such thing as a dumb question. Sometimes it's good to throw questions out there just to see the response you might get. So I like to walk in with a client if we're looking at a house. I try to stay out of the way, but I keep my eyes and ears open so that I can interpret whatever information might come forward.
Yeah, and you notice things like smells.
Yeah.
I guess that's the first thing you think of. Okay, John. Well, awesome. And we're going to talk more in the weeks ahead about contracts and those kind of things. And we all have all sorts of real estate topics that we're going to get to. So have a great weekend and we will talk to you very soon.
I'll be back in 1 week. Thanks, Martin.
John Carlson, you know him as Johnny Smartpoint. johnnysmartpoint.com is the web address. You can give him a call, 604-612-0080. Or send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. Even if you're just starting to think about selling your home, it might be good to have a conversation with John. Get that ball rolling, even if it takes a year or 2 years. This is Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong. And coming up, the Mona Lisa might be getting her own room at the Louvre Museum in Paris. And you know that the Mona Lisa was once stolen. It was actually taken out of the museum by a guy who had the painting hidden under his coat. I've got that story when we return right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Strong. Have you been to the Louvre Museum in Paris? Then you've no doubt seen the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in the world. And it's always strange to go into this huge room with lots of other paintings, but everyone is there in the middle staring at this little painting covered in bulletproof glass, everybody taking pictures. Well, this week, the president of the Louvre announced that the Mona Lisa could be moved into its own room underground. The museum's president says that would give visitors a better experience, especially since many people just go to the museum to see that painting alone. So why is the Mona Lisa the one painting that everybody looks at as the most important painting of all time? It was painted in the early 1500s by Italian Renaissance painter Leonardo da Vinci. It's believed to depict an Italian noblewoman, Lisa del Giocondo. It was purchased by the King of France, King Francis I, a few years after Da Vinci died, and moved from Italy to France. For a while, it hung in the palace of Louis XIV, and it spent some time in the bedroom of Napoleon before officially finding its home in the Louvre, which is the National Museum of France, of course. While it has always been known to be one of the great paintings of the Renaissance, the Mona Lisa wasn't really that famous outside of the art world until 1911. That's when it was stolen from the Louvre. Back then, they didn't even notice it was gone until the next day. And even then, they thought that it might have just been taken out to be photographed. So it took a few more days before they even started the investigation. A bunch of painters were the first suspects. And this is true. They even brought Pablo Picasso in for questioning. They thought Picasso might have stolen the Mona Lisa. But it turns out the guy who stole the painting was an employee at the Louvre, Vincenzo Perugia. He had hidden in a broom closet and then waited for the museum to close. And then he walked out with the Mona Lisa under his coat. His motive wasn't necessarily money. Vincenzo Perugia, who you might guess from the name, was Italian. He believed that the Mona Lisa should be at home in an Italian museum, not a French one. At first, he wisely laid low. He kept the painting, the Mona Lisa, in his little apartment for 2 years, but was nabbed when he contacted the Uffizi Gallery in Florence to try to sell it. Perugia served 6 months in jail, but back home in Italy, he became a bit of a hero among Italians who thought that the great Italian painting should be in an Italian museum. It's believed that during those 2 years that the Mona Lisa was kept in Vincenzo's small apartment, a forger made 6 exact copies of the painting. And there's still some conspiracy theories going around that the Mona Lisa that hangs in the Louvre is actually one of those forgeries. It's unlikely, but it was the newspaper stories about the theft and a number of books being written about it that made the Mona Lisa so well known and the iconic work of art that it is today. And what's it worth? Well, definitely priceless. You'd call it priceless. But another Da Vinci painting that he painted around the same time is the most expensive painting ever sold. That's Salvator Mundi, which translates to Savior of the World. It's a depiction of Jesus holding a crystal orb that sold for $450 million in 2017. This is Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong. Coming up, is Canada Revenue showing a kinder, gentler side now that the income tax deadline has passed? I've got that story along with the latest on London drugs and their cyber hacking nightmare. That's all when we come back right after this.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.